I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio. Every week, my guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every single food dollar we spend either protects or degrades the environment, produces foods with high nutrition or empty calories, and either helps pay a fair wage or keeps farm workers among the working poor. We get to make that choice every time we push a cart through the grocery store, visit the farmer's market, and eat at a restaurant. I hope you enjoy this interview.
She and her husband, John, operate an award-winning Echo Inn called In Serendipity Farm and Bed and Breakfast, just outside of Monroe, Wisconsin. And Lisa has been not only a terrific advocate of home-baked businesses, but she and her husband have actually written a number of books to help us all kind of take a look at, you know, can I do this? I mean, people tell me my breads are good, or people tell me my cookies are great, or, boy, I get so many requests for my jam. Can I do this? Could I actually start a small cottage industry, a cottage business, right in my home kitchen? Lisa, thank you for being with us this morning, because there's a conference coming up to help answer some of those questions.
Hey, you bet. I was getting hungry hearing about your muffins there, Sylvia. Those sound so good.
Well, you're like the muffin maven of your section of Wisconsin. That I know. You run In Serendipity, and I mean, you're known for those muffins, and for years you baked them and made them available to your bed breakfast guests, but now you can sell them. Lisa, tell us about this conference that might help lots of us who are thinking about launching into a similar business.
You bet. Thanks so much, Sylvia, because it's interesting. Cottage food businesses, the ability to sell something you made in your home kitchen versus commercial, that's the big difference we're talking about here, is really the oldest form of commerce, right? You know, I mean, making something in your kitchen and selling it directly to your neighbor. But thanks to regulations and other things that got clunky in our governmental systems, we lost that. So really, basically the last 10 years is when this cottage food revival has come up, where states are saying, hey, what can I do to help small-scale businesses get started to increase and make local food systems more resilient? So it's been percolating, but it really has taken off during the pandemic. It's been a silver lining of COVID. If you think about it from the perspective of, yeah, there's been folks who have lost jobs, particularly in the food service industries, but have said, hey, I'm going to do something on my own and take this opportunity. Folks who need to stay home, who are reinventing. So there has basically been a surge of new cottage food businesses, over 50% in many states of folks starting these. So yeah, I figure the time is ripe to, for the first time, gather nationally in the virtual space to learn from each other, to hear about the movement and where things are going within food freedom, and to learn a lot from each other. So super excited. This is, again, a first-time conference. It's the Home-Based Food Entrepreneur Virtual National Conference, which will be April 6th through 9th coming up.
You know, I took a look at the website and registered right away, because I thought,
excellent.
Oh, man, this is just up my alley. Because although I've been selling breads for a number of years, it's been on a really tiny scale. Because as you know, Lisa, my husband and I really put in a lot of our time to raising our beef cattle. But the holding of classes and selling of baked goods has become increasingly more and more of my time. And so finding out how I might do it better is really an opportunity I just couldn't miss. And that's why I signed up right away. So you're one of the keynote speakers at this conference. And of course, you know, I don't know how they could have a conference like this without you being a keynoter, because of the books that you and your husband, John Ivanko, have published over the years, including one that I'm looking at right now. I'm in the studio and I brought them with me, which is called Homemade for Sale: How to Set Up and Market a Food Business from Your Home Kitchen. And another one is one of those first ones, I think, that you did, which was called Ecopreneuring: Putting Purpose and the Planet Before Profits, also by you and John. Lisa, your keynote, you're one of four. Who are the other three that are going to be featured at this conference?
I am so excited about this because really for the first time, we can look at these issues more nationally and bring together a really great lineup. So Erica Smith is the lead attorney with the Institute for Justice. They are a nonprofit law firm that has really taken on championing cottage food entrepreneurs around the country when we hit barriers in regulation and politics and big money and all those things where we need a legal champion. So they have been tracking that, fighting for that, and really have been cutting edge too on this new food freedom movement we've been talking about, where increasingly states like Wyoming are taking down barriers and allowing even more things to be done in a home kitchen for sale. So Erica will be giving us the lay of the land there. David Crable, he founded Forager.com and hosts the Forager podcast and is a national champion for, again, bringing cottage food entrepreneurs together, sharing information and resources. And he's a cottage food entrepreneur himself, a fudge maker over in California. And Alexia Krewick is the executive director of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund that also has been an incredible activist champion for food freedom and helping people, particularly farmers, be able to sell their wares. So this is the first time we've all gathered and have shared information like that. But we are at such an exciting time now, both with the growth of the number of new businesses, but also the direction and where things are going. And increasing success stories of places, again, like Wyoming that have taken on food freedom that allow you to do a whole lot more out of your home kitchen, be it if you're in, you know, a small town, an urban area, a farm, that is just going to help our local economies, bottom line. Mm. And thanks for the sweet plug for Homemade for Sale. Increasingly, still, as what you said earlier, people don't realize they can do this, or they say, hey, that's legal. I didn't know that. So the idea of more educational resources is really helping. And for that conference coming up, we kept it a super affordable $20 for registration. It goes over 4 days. Everything will also be recorded so you can watch it later. There's live Q&As. But if you register by March 1st, our publisher of the Homemade for Sale book, New Society, generously donated over 50 books. So those are much better than your Powerball odds of winning by registering by March 1st, and then you'll be entered in the drawing for that whole one of those mini books.
Oh, terrific. Thank you. That question that you mentioned just, you know, a few seconds ago, which was, is it legal? I would suspect that lots of people who've thought about this just wonder about, you know, gee, I'd love to do this, but I don't know if I can. And Lisa, I think what I'd like to acknowledge right now and thank you is for the work that you did for the state of Wisconsin. You and a couple of other of your cohorts in crime, or rather in efforts to make decriminalize, actually making it possible to have to bake more and actually sell more from your home. You worked to make it possible for us to sell breads and baked products in the state of Wisconsin through a legislation that was finally put into effect called the Cookie Law. Can you tell us a little bit about that kind of work, you know, what it took to push through some stuff?
Sure. And let me just first qualify that, as you well know, Wisconsin can get quirky. You know, every other state in the country, except for New Jersey, that is a real kindred spirited sister state in this, because they are the only state that doesn't have cottage food legislation and has a very similar political barrier situation to us in Wisconsin. But every other state has a law passed through normal channels. They have regulations. Some may be better than others, but the point is it's working as the system intended. In Wisconsin, the pickle bill passed back in 2010, which allowed the sale of high-acid foods, which is great for farmers to sell the safer canned items, jams, jellies, pickles, that sort of thing. And then realizing this and realizing that there's a lot more opportunity for baked goods, we had been championing for the cookie bill. And long story short, never could get it passed thanks to political barriers in our fine state. So we went the judicial route, and then that was when Chris Mariandella-Enns and I sued the state with legal support from the Institute for Justice that ruling back in 2017 lifted the ban on the sale of home baked goods. So it's weird. We don't have a law in Wisconsin, but it is perfectly legal to sell your non-hazardous baked goods because of the lawsuit. But we are the anomaly, entertaining as we may be. It wasn't what we wanted, but in the sense that we wanted to have a law like normal states and regulations and all of that. But the good news with democracy is we still have three branches of government, and when one fails you, you can turn to another. And what we're talking about here, Sylvia, in general, is non-hazardous foods is the category that describes what you can sell out of your home kitchen. And that term non-hazardous can sound a little weird, but what it basically means is things that are safe, shelf-stable to sell. So anything that would require refrigeration would be hazardous, and no, you don't want to sell that out of your home kitchen. Think about things you would bring to the farmer's market that could stay on your table for a couple hours and be perfectly safe. So there is a ton of things, particularly in the baked good realm, that do qualify as non-hazardous, like all of your breads, those muffins you described, most cookies, cakes, that kind of thing. Once you get into the dairy, you know, things like a cheesecake, a custard pie, something with whipped cream, of course, those would be hazardous. Those would not be allowed under cottage food. There is a scientific side to it, a water activity level. You could easily have a recipe tested if you're not sure. But the key is we definitely want to keep these products safe. And there definitely is a very wide umbrella of what non-hazardous is.
Thank you for that, because it was certainly a question I had.
Is there a limit to how much you can sell?
Good question. In normal states, sometimes. Minnesota, for example, the gross sales cap is $18,000. In Wisconsin, because we don't have a law, there currently is no gross sales cap for baked goods. There is a very low $5,000 gross sales cap for the high-acid canned items under the pickles bill. I say very low because it is the lowest in the country. Increasingly, states are lifting any gross sales ban. Over 25 states now do not have one, because it really doesn't make a difference if you sold $100 worth of cookies or $30,000 worth of cookies. It's the same cookie. You know, it's the same safety level. In reality, though, your family is going to kick you out of your kitchen before any gross sales cap will, because that's a lot of volume in still a relatively tiny space, which is what I find so exciting about cottage food businesses, which still are, they're primarily women, and they are primarily start off as part-time businesses, but a lot of folks have dreams of going commercial, be it a bricks and mortar bakery shop or selling their product wholesale. And being able to start really with no cost, no debt in your home kitchen allows you to experiment with that. So if you're making that much volume, you may have something where you need to start thinking about, hey, maybe I need a commercial space. Maybe I need more space. Maybe I need other things. But you'll have your business up and running already, that you'll be in a much better position to plan for that than off the starting block.
You mentioned that the non-hazardous definition, which is great to have. But has there been other kinds of pushback? I mean, is there resistance or is there objection from established commercial businesses to cottage industries?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. The short answer is yes, sometimes, which I find almost humorous, because it is such a David and Goliath story that the big commercial industrial bakeries would be scared of a little bread baker like you and I. However, on one level, that might be a good sign that they would be scared of people who are selling directly to their neighbors, who are taking charge of their ingredients and know exactly what goes into their bread, as you do, because that's important value, you know, so that's good. So there is some pushback, but in general, the cottage food community, both within the state of Wisconsin and nationally, and this is what I'm so excited about this conference, is the most collaborative community of entrepreneurs you'll ever meet, in that we know that when we all succeed, everybody succeeds. And that competitive element, because we're all small, lean businesses, because we all got started up in our own kitchen, because we want to see other people, and in this case, primarily other women succeed, there is such an information sharing bit going on here of how did I do it, what worked, what didn't, questions asked of how can I market this. And there's been definitely a lot of, even though there's this tremendous growth of businesses during the pandemic, it's a big pivot too of how can I do this safely? You know, how can I sell my stuff? And there's a lot of things like porch pickups going on now, which is a whole other arena that people are sharing their ideas with. And for the conference itself, the primary speakers are cottage food entrepreneurs themselves who have been successful in all sorts of arenas who, hands down, I mean, everybody we talked to that we asked to come speak was like, I will do that. And that's a tremendous credit to these types of entrepreneurs. So some people might think we're competition, but within the community, we are all for each other succeeding.
One of the things that I found interesting in the way that this conference, which is, as you mentioned, April 6th through 9th, is being set up as a virtual conference, is that every workshop and every keynote speaker has a time allowed for live Q&A, which I thought, wow, that's really innovative that we're going to be able to use this technology to ask questions directly of the speakers or of the workshop presenters. So thank you
arranging
that.
The virtual space is so new, but I'm so grateful for it because I've had this idea percolating in the back of my mind for a couple of years that wouldn't it be great to get together as cottage food entrepreneurs? But because we are so spread out across the country, because these are still small businesses and the financial investment of traveling to a conference was a barrier, that now that the virtual space is so much more accepted, it gives us that opportunity. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's that questions and asking each other, how did you do something? How would you rather do something? That really brings us together as a unique growing cottage food industry.
Wow. Let me ask you too. There are the four keynoters, which you've already mentioned, and there are workshops. Can you give us a sampling of what those workshops are about?
Oh, sure. So they really cover the gamut. A lot of the cottage food entrepreneurs themselves are sharing everything from success strategies to marketing to social media, which has been a huge platform for these businesses to get up and running. And then an array of experts to one you will be at, I'm sure, Sylvia, is Amy Halloran with the Artisan Grain Collaborative is talking about local grains and how to incorporate those into your bread products, your baked products. And this, you know, the tent is wide with cottage food bakers as far as where we get our ingredients from. Do you know, it runs the gamut from large industrial supplies to people who know their local miller. But you and I would love to get more people knowing their local miller and to introduce these ideas. So the idea here is to spark some new ideas and also cover the basic pragmatics of the business. My husband John's going to be talking on the hobby versus business. And that's been a big step for a lot of folks because you might have been probably making these cookies for forever and giving them away, and all of a sudden you're charging for them. That's a huge leap, but it's also an empowering leap. And how can you smartly track your business expenses, for example, and your miles every time you go to the store to get your supplies or you make a delivery? That's a huge factor in the financial success of your business, and want to make sure that happens. So also, too, on the business side, Rachel Armstrong with Farm Commons will be talking on insurance, and Amy Cook with the Food Lawyer Network is talking on your business structures. We actually have a strong legal lineup here of experts to help you on that aspect of your business, too.
Wow. It's going to be hard to decide which ones to actually get to sign up for. It's quite...
Well, no, that's a good point, is there... the way the conference is running is it's one workshop at a time because we got that feedback of don't make me choose. So you don't have to choose. And if you miss something, they'll all be archived online too, that you can see them later.
Well, let's take a moment right now. Where would people go to sign up for this conference, to register for it, and to find out more about it?
Yeah. So the nonprofit sponsor of this project and the host is Renewing the Countryside. So it's renewingthecountryside.org under events. You will see the link to this conference. It's on the HUVA conference platform. Also, too, I'm sure off of your notes for this session, Sylvia, and your website. So, yep, you can easily get there. It is, again, a kickoff event. So we appreciate learning and feedback to folks as we go. But as the home-based food entrepreneur virtual national conference, we are creating some new space here. So, yep, you can find it all online, easily register. Register by March 1st and you get into the book drawing. And also we have Facebook and Instagram pages off of Cottage Food Con.
Okay, great. Now, you talk about the food freedom movement. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I really hadn't heard that term before.
Yeah, this is really interesting and growing. So stay tuned. We'll be talking about this for a while still. So basically, food freedom is a concept describes this idea of regulations, or sometimes lack thereof, that allow businesses to do more in a relationship of trust with their customer. So an easy way to look at it is when we're talking about cottage food laws, I've been talking about what can you do. You know, you can do this type of food product. You can make your high-acid pickles. Often food freedom acts basically have a smaller list of what you can't do and then everything else you can. So it puts a lot of trust in the relationships between, in these cases, the government and regulatory agencies and the producers and the customers themselves. There's a real transparency. So what you are doing needs to be obviously clearly communicated to the customer. But for example, in Wyoming, it's allowing things like home-cooked meals out of your home kitchen for public sale. And you see this a little bit more now in California. They have what they call the Micro Enterprise Kitchen Act, which is specifically allowing prepared meals out of home kitchens. That's a whole other arena. Everything I'm talking about and everything, honestly, at the Cottage Food Conference is about products, because that's the bread and butter of this movement still around the country. So I can, you know, sell you my chocolate cake, but once I start, you know, cutting it up and putting it on a plate and serving it to you with a fork, that's food service. Normally, that is a whole other realm. You need restaurant licensing. You need the health department to come inspect, et cetera, et cetera. The food freedom movement starts saying, well, let's talk about that. Let's see what things we can do to open things up for food entrepreneurs. So California and Wyoming and a handful of other states are ones to watch. California in particular with this micro kitchen bit. There are some limitations there of how many meals you can sell a week. But again, especially during the pandemic, this is a real opportunity for people to drive their own business, keep food systems local, and to really get some unique food items and meals to people.
Who would have thought, Lisa, that the pandemic would actually open some cracks for new kinds of businesses and new ways of delivery?
No kidding. That really is, as we were saying, a silver lining, and we need to hold on to those, especially, you know, during all the tragedy that COVID has brought up. But it is inspiring people to think in new ways. And you know, you definitely see that amongst farmers and people in our food communities, and that's reflected in these new business startups. And I think long term this is a game changer, and that people will start realizing that, no, I don't just have to, you know, go through an industrialized food system to eat. No, I don't just have to, you know, eat at a franchise that looks exactly the same throughout the country. I can get to know my, not just farmer, but food artisan, my own chef, you know, and all of the cultural foods in our country and all of the unique growing climates and all of these things that would never have the capacity to go commercial mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want them to, right? We want them to be regional. And as we travel, we can tap into more of these things too. It has such potential and it's just starting.
Boy, you have just opened up my brain to a whole new kind of vista here when it comes to places like Wyoming and California and the ability to, you know, that would be the bleeding edge, but the ability to really regionalize the cuisine of an area.
Oh, totally. And you see that already within cottage food of a lot of different ethnic foods that you just wouldn't have the capacity, be it shipping production, to be commercial. You see that a lot by me here in southern Wisconsin and Greene County, where we have a strong Swiss population. And you see foods pop up now with cottage food of the breads and the pastries and things like that, or people make like the German Stollen bread at the holidays. Those are all unique items that are what our region has historically been known for that now you can actually buy and eat.
Wow. I just love this idea. It really, like I said, I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh. This is terrific.
And you know, one thing too, that the argument that I often butt up against is, well, you know, how can we trust people's kitchens? Well, how can we trust this? And number one, it's a choice. You know, nobody is forcing you to buy my bread at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. That's your choice. And you can ask me about it. You can talk to me about it. You know, I mean, on one level, there's nothing more transparent, right? And secondly, I personally, and I believe you're in this camp too, Sylvia, I trust people's kitchens. Do you know that's where we cook for our homes, our families, right? Our friends. And that trust goes beyond just an economic transaction. That's like the fundamental roots of our society, right? I would argue that if we don't trust each other, if we can't trust each other over a loaf of bread, that's not even, we've got a lot more bigger issues. This is a start, not just for some economic change, but some real societal change of learning to trust each other again in community.
You know, it's not, and I guess I will take it a step and add this, I guess, to it as well, that trust each other, but also because of COVID, I think more people decided to research and very often get on the road to find the food they wanted. So they were visiting, you know, hog farmers and pork and lamb producers, as well as beef producers, buying their product that was usually and most often, I mean, virtually all the time, processed at either a state or a USDA facility, but then sold from the farm, where they were able to meet the farmer and see the farm and decide, as you have so well put, Lisa, decide, yes, this is where I want to place my trust, put down my dollar and get the food. And I think that that also, as you have so well said, works into the baked products, the cookie bill, the pickle bill, those kinds of foods, where people are coming in and saying, you know, I've got to meet you and I'll trust you. I see where this is happening, and they buy. So it's also the consumer becoming more involved, it seems to me, and researching and becoming educated, and then saying, okay, this is where I'm going to get my food.
Yeah, totally. And here's too where technology is playing a bigger role, because you can find that information so much faster. We'll be talking about that at the conference, of basically bakery businesses that have started overnight off of Instagram, because the visuals are so appealing, yes, right? And people love that. But you can find things much quicker now, and you order online and pick up. So everything's working to really snowballing this whole effort.
Well, Lisa, we've come to the end of our time together, but I'm wondering, could you please give us the website again so that people can decide to look at your site, at the site, the conference site, and then register?
You bet. So it's the Home-Based Food Entrepreneur Virtual National Conference coming up April 6th through 9th. Renewing the Countryside is the host, renewingthecountryside.org. You'll find it there under events. And it's popping up on Google there too. And our social is at Cottage Food Con on Facebook and Instagram.
Visit my website, bronxtobarn.com, to download this and past interviews, to learn about my farm, and to reserve 100% grass-fed beef. We deliver to Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. Thanks.